Now, in the areas of questions, one of the questions which we have here is asking about the country of Germany, and I do not know whether the questioner is hostile towards the Germans or not, but they asked this question. They said, how do you place Judah in Germany? We realize the descendants of Judah are mixed with those of Israel all over the world. Why Germany specifically? Since the kings come from Judah, it's more likely England, is it not? We know England is Ephraim, and that those of Judah are mixed with them. Why the stress on Germany? Why does Germany have to be Judah? Why is Germany going to be against us or for us in the last battle? Well, we'll answer that in the same vein at which it was asked. The areas of Germany is Judah today, and with no uncertain reality, there's no way to question this. In the first place, when Judah and Benjamin remained in the land of Jerusalem after having returned to build the temple, and in the periods of the Maccabees, when their temples were destroyed by wars that were started by Jews, the people fought and lost the temple they had rebuilt under the when they returned under Nehemiah. And then Judah and Benjamin were still in the land, and Herod built the temple, which was there in the days of Jesus, all covered over with gold. And it was a pagan. It was done by a pagan, because Herod, king of the Jews, was a Sadducean pagan that had come in. He despised Christ. He hated the Israelites of Judah and Benjamin. And Benjamin, of course, and the men of Judah largely lived in Galilee. And that's the reason why Jesus was called a Galilean. His parents lived in Galilee. The scripture says, search and see if any prophet cometh out of Galilee, was the very words of the Jews that controlled the temple when they sent out men to capture Christ. And so when Christ fulfilled not only all the prophecies of Messiah, and when he had declared that to his disciples that the generation was refusing him, of course, in the city of Jerusalem, and better for that generation in that day than it'd be better for Sodom and Gomorrah than it would be for this generation in that day. Now, he wasn't talking about Judah and Benjamin. He was talking about the Jews of Jerusalem, which Jesus said were their father devil, and which he also said were Canaanites and guilty of the blood of Abel. Now, after the crucifixion and ascension of Christ, remember that the Jews fought the Christian church in Palestine. They sent in soldiers. They even had the Apostle Paul, who had been raised in Spain and had been raised under synagogue teaching, though he had also sat at the feet of Gamaliel. And he had been brought over to Jerusalem and placed in charge of Jewish soldiers to persecute the church. And he hadn't heard the things that Silas and others had heard about Christ, or the disciples had heard. But of course, Christ stops him on the road to Damascus and unveils himself to him. And so, as Apostle Paul says, "Who art thou, Lord?" And he hears the voice of Christ and he sees him. But the rest of the Jews, they just said it thundered, because they had no capacity to understand spiritual things and could not behold Christ in heaven. Well, remember that in this time, as Paul and the disciples continue to preach, the Jews are persecuting Christians. They're sending out armies. They have even utilized their gold in some areas behind the temporal rulers under the control of Rome to persecute Christians. But at the time of 70 A.D., when Titus the Roman came against Jerusalem, they had a very good Caesar on the throne. And Titus was not Caesar at that time. He was the son of Caesar. But these Jews that were in Jerusalem had refused to pay any of the provincial taxes that Rome charged to the various provinces. Now, just prior to this time, about 6 or 7 years before 70 A.D., the Jews that were persecuting from the temple the Christians quite at large, and the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, though they that lived in Galilee and in Judea, had petitioned Caesar for a right to migrate. And they asked for permission to migrate out of the land of Judah and Benjamin, out of the land of Galilee and out of the land of Jerusalem, and they wanted to migrate into Europe. And so so Caesar, who was Titus's father, gave them permission to migrate. And a great mass of Israelites went out of Galilee and out of Judah, and they migrated over through Europe, and they came in to Europe. And this was the coming of the Visigoths and the Normans. For this is what they were recalled when they arrived. Within a few years, they were calling the Galileans Normans, and they were referring to the Visigoths, which were parts of Judah. Now, this question cites that Judah was mixed among all Israel. Yes, in the days that Israel went out and was captured by Sennacherib, some of Judah went out with Israel. And it talks about the fact that quite a few of Judah had gone out with Israel. But they were numbered with Israel. They were not with Judah and Benjamin that had returned to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple that had been over, and the city that had been taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. And so in this hour, why the Jews had no part nor lot with Israel or Judah and Benjamin in Babylon. They had been the Yehudim that had operated as Baal priests and operated in this area. And when and Jews had gone to Pergamos, when later the area of Babylon had been thrown down by Alexander the Great, the Medes and Persians, and then Alexander the Great, the Jews had gone to Babylon, and then from Babylon they went over to Pergamos. Now Pergamos is an island in the Aegean Sea, and it's the place where Satan's seat was. It was the Isle of Pergamos that Jewry had set up its powerful money-changing system. And they loaned money to various countries in Europe, and they sought to involve empires when they got caught short with money and to gain their will. And so it was from Pergamos that the Jews were operating after Alexander the Great had come along. You know, he had broken their power in the city of Babylon, and Jewry had fled to Pergamos. Now, in the days of Jesus, you know, why Pergamos was the headquarters of Jewry. And Jesus talks to the church at Pergamos and says, this is where Satan's seat is, because this is where the Jews, the sons of Lucifer, were operating from. And Herod, who was known as the Herodian, the king of the Jews, he and his family had been wealthy gold lenders and had involved Rome, and he was made king of the Jews by Rome because of their indebtedness to him and because of the power of their Jewish family. Now, when Judah and Benjamin came into Europe, it was the coming of the Goths and the Normans. When Judah had gone out of captivity under Shalmaneser and came through the Caucasian Pass, where already the Scythians, which were the Greeks, had settled, and already were and they were Israel's stock, and Phohenoth, the sons of Enoch, which was what they had been called. The fact is that Israel infiltrated through the Caucasus and into Europe and in tribal groups, and while they sometimes fought battles among themselves because one leader or another would get a little grabby, the fact still remains that Anglo-Saxon pushed over to the British Isles and the Celts, and Naphtali went into the Scandinavian countries and so forth, and Dan had made his mark, and Danube, Dnieper, and settled in Dan's land or Denmark. The fact still comes out with that under all of this procedure, that Judah and Benjamin, Judah that had been with the tribes, settled in the heart of Europe, and they were known where the Germans were. Now, the fact is that the barbarians were not barbarians. Rome, of course, had as a civilizing influence the tribe of Gad. And the tribe of Gad had been released with the 10 tribes, had moved over, and had settled largely in northern Italy. And the Lombards are largely the tribe of Gad in northern Italy. But as we point this out, the areas of Judah had become the Germans. Now, we hear them talk about the Huns and the barbarism and so forth. Well, anything that was not in Rome with its tremendous palaces and its fine buildings and so forth was barbaric. In other words, they even called the British barbaric, and they tried to invade Britain with great troops from Rome. And in this day of invading Europe, they swept the country, and the British were not foolish. When they saw that the legions were too many, they would break and draw back into Britain. In fact, very, very cleverly, because they saw that the Romans were excellent at road building, and whereas they built fair roads, and they built them out of ground granite, and they layered them with ground stone, the Romans were building highways of stone fitted together and building arch bridges, and the British decided that they would retreat, and everywhere they would retreat, why the British would have to, Romans would build these stone highways and these fine bridges, and so they would retreat and retreat, and they just led the Romans on. The Romans built highways all over Britain, see, and always they would build them around their cities, because though London was one of the cities that Rome came into, but the people fell back out of it, and then they left the overseer there to collect the taxes with a semi-guard, and then when they returned back to Rome again, the Britishers came out, cut the heads off the Roman guard, and killed all the people, and then it would be about 3 years later, Rome would find out what had happened, and they'd send back another army, and they'd build some more roads, and so forth. But the fact was that when they came to Rome, they still called the Romans called the British barbarians. Why, they say they don't fight, they retreat, and all this. And the Britishers were retreating and only fighting when they were successful. So when you read in Roman history that the British were barbarians, the Huns were barbarians, it's because these people didn't surrender and let themselves be run by Rome. They were barbarians. In fact, Attila, you know, who was, he was one of the Germans that was in the saddle a large part of the time. Well, they said this barbarian rides in the saddle, but behind him, they had built cities out of stone. They had large communities. Their peasants owned their farms, and they supported the soldiers because the soldiers were necessary. And, of course, they were all barbarically raiding other tribes and areas around them, but the fact was that that even in this instance, the Romans were talking about the terrible barbarians because they resisted and fought so savagely against their warriors, but always their warriors with their golden helmets and everything. They were civilized, of course, because they had civilization behind them. But you know that when they sent out St. Athanasius, and also we know that St. Augustine, too, was sent out, and they went up into Britain following the truth. They said, why, these people are not barbarians. They said they even have the gospel. They even have Christian churches up here in this land. And you see, it wasn't until the 3rd century or after that Constantine had conquered Rome and the bad emperors, and by this sign we conquer. And so the church became free in Rome. And before this, they'd been in the catacombs and fleeing from persecution and all the problems. And now the church became a government-sanctioned institution, and it was no longer persecuted. But the things that had been going on by pharaohs or by Caesars that knew not any of the truth, why some of them, even in the days of Nero, for instance, they had burned Christians at the stake. They turned them loose in the Colosseum. During the earliest period of the ministry of the Apostle Paul, why, they had even the Apostle Paul thrown into the Colosseum, where he had to fight as he did at Ephesus as a gladiator. You know, one of the things about the Apostle Paul, he was a husky fellow, and he was well built. And when they put him in the Colosseum to fight as a gladiator, why, he fought as a gladiator against men and beasts and won. And they had to turn him loose because when the gladiator won, they would give him his appeal. And so the Apostle Paul was jumping on these pacifists. And he says, have you resisted against blood? Have any of you fought with the beasts at Ephesus as I have? See? So this was one of these strange and unique situations. He had fought with beasts and had won in the area of this situation. So in this area, come on in. Good to see you. So anyhow, remember, therefore, that the people that had come in, as Israel had scattered over Europe, so had the Judah, which had been with Israel, which were known as the Goths. Now, they were never barbarians, and the Huns were never barbarians, nor were the British barbarians. It was only Rome that thought they were barbarians because they fought so savagely, and they resisted the advance of Rome, and Rome said they were barbarians until St. Augustine, who went with the conquering troops of Rome back into Britain. Now, they had already invaded Britain 2 times. History of the Roman Empire by Gibbons tells you this. And every time they had to build these fine stone roads everywhere the British retreated, and the British had actually strategically developed the highways all over Britain with Roman soldiers and Roman builders, and then they would surrender. A small group of the cities would surrender, and the tax collector would be put there, and they would pay their token taxes. Rome would retreat, and then they'd kill the tax collector, and for 3 years Rome wouldn't get any taxes, and then she'd come back again. Well, this time, when they brought this St. Augustine there, St. Augustine wrote in his book, and I can show you, I have the City of God, and I have these other volumes, and also St. Augustine said, he says, what a strange thing. He says, I find in Britain churches, he says, churches as old as ours in Rome. I find here ministers, abbotries, that are serving Jesus Christ. He says, I find here that they do not have the doctrines or decorum of our church. But he says, I find stalwart Christians, I find fine buildings, I find their cities and communities are living in a very high order. These are not barbarians, they are civilized. And we are conquering them to extend our civilization, or conquering civilization for civilization's sake. Now, then St. Augustine went into the areas of the Huns, and he says, I find these Huns are not civilized as were British. But I also do find that they are not barbarians as such, that do not have fine cities, for I find they have cities and they have agriculture, and that missions have been established from Britain in Germany. And he said, but he says, of course they fight savagely. In fact, Attila, you know, gathered up so many legions, and even had some of the British in his legions. When he attacked Rome, he came almost to the gates of Rome and almost overthrew the holy city. But this story about the barbarians in Europe had actually come out of Roman historians who thought everybody that wasn't Roman or under the power of Rome were barbarians. So therefore, the peoples of Judah were the Goths of Germany. Now, it is true that Germany heard the gospel, became Christian very, very quickly. In fact, 7 princes of Germany were the defending forces against Genghis Khan's hordes that were coming into Europe and helped to organize all of the Christians in Europe into a common army to defeat Genghis Khan. In fact, Christianity spread in Germany as it did in Judah, and the 31st chapter of the book of Jeremiah says, I'll make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah in those days. I'll put my spirit in their hearts and so forth. And the house of Judah and the house of Joseph, or Britain, was to, and the Anglo-Saxons were to be Christian. Now, we discovered that this is true, and that Christianity was older in Britain than in Germany, but not too many years older, and it was very prevalent throughout all of Germany. But Rome only had a few Christians and some civilization at Rome, and after the church had come in power in the years 300, why, many Romans became Christians, and only the tribe of Gad was basically Christian in Rome. So we see that actually Christianity had a firm hold on Germany before it enveloped all the areas of the Roman Empire. Now, when in 70 BC, or AD rather, after Christ, why, we discovered that when Titus the Roman went back to Jerusalem because the Jews had refused to pay their taxes, and finally he was ordered to go in and command them to pay their taxes, the peoples that had already migrated into Europe as the Visigoths and the peoples of Norman, by the permission of the father of Titus the Roman, who was Caesar. And he was a benevolent Caesar and had dealt well with the people, and so he permitted them to enter in and pass through Roman territory. Now the Visigoths and the Goths fought a little as they came into the areas of Central Europe, and then they joined, and the peoples that had come out of Galilee that had the gospel of Christ too, and it helped the spread of the gospel of Christ in Germany, because the Visigoths had this gospel and were not altogether pagans. Some of them were, but most of them weren't. So the Goths and the Visigoths are the house of Judah. They came out of Palestine when Titus the Roman's father gave them permission to enter into Europe. They came in when the Shalmaneser gave them permission, and they fled from Shalmaneser's captivity. So this is the reason why we refer to the fact that they are the house of Judah. Now we point out another factor. In the book of Zechariah, we find that it talks about the peoples of Judah, and how they would have a governor that would devour the many people round about, which was one of the last days, because one of the things that would be the burden would come to Israel. And he says, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about. And that day, and so now therefore, in that day, the Lord says, I will smite every horse with astonishment, his rider with madness, and I will open my eyes upon the house of Judah, and I will smite every horse of the people with blindness, and the governors of Judah shall say in their hearts. Now, the first place, it was in World War I that Judah and Britain were fighting, which came through the machinations of international Jewry, and the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, and all the factors involved in the war. And so we find that in World War I that Joseph and Judah were fighting, and the flower of the German cavalry were sweeping out across the field of Mons, and the essence of the finest of the Scottish troops were standing in Highlanders, and they were getting ready to fight, and the Highlanders and the German cavalry would have clashed, were one of the biggest destructions that ever took place of white Christian civilization as far as their warriors were concerned. Suddenly, across this battlefield, God interposed, and the Scottish Highlanders saw these angelic hosts standing across this great field, and they saw them about 30 to 40 feet high, great warriors standing shoulder to shoulder across this plain. And they could hardly believe what they saw, and the German cavalry that was charging across this field drew up to a stop, and the horses whinnied, and they wouldn't move ahead, and the riders couldn't get them to move, and the Germans retreated from the field, and that battle was stopped and stayed from the cream of both armies destroying themselves, and those horses were blind. They never regained their sight. They had to shoot in the head over 8,000 horses because they had gone totally blind. And this is what the scripture said, I will strike the horses in this day, I will strike the horses of Judah with blindness, and so forth. And this is what happened at Mons, and so both the house of Joseph and the house of Judah were separated in that time. Now it tells you also, and it's much easier to define in some translations than this, but in that day I'm going to make a governor of Judah like a hearth of fire among the woods, like a torch of fire in the sheath, and they shall devour all the people round about on the right side and on the left. And so now this is a significant thing, because remember that in the book of Zechariah, God talks about his Jerusalem and his holy city, and he's not talking about old Jerusalem as such, in a sense. He's talking about a new Jerusalem that will be located in the witnessing countries of God's kingdom, because all we are living stones that we frame together that grow into a holy temple unto God. And all of the white race are Israel, and more. And by this time they've all left the land of Palestine. They're already settled in Western Europe. They've moved over into this country. And so now, therefore, he said, I'm going to make the governor of Judah like a hearth of fire among wood. Now, they had one governor, and he was able to gather and stabilize all the Germanic peoples of the house of Judah. He was able to unify Austria and the Czechoslovakia and Germany and Prussia and all this. Now, you can say what you will, but Hitler fulfills this prophecy. He was the governor that devoured all the people round about, but or enclosed or gathered all these people round about. And there was a reason for it. Organized Jewry had started the thing off, and he was out the first to protect his own people. One thing you can say about Hitler, he was for Germany first, last, and always. And if we just had one or two leaders in America that were for America first, last, and always, why, we'd have a lot to shout about. And so as far as but the situation was that Jewry forced Germany into war. Jewry forced Poland into war. And Poland had Jew masters in their government and socialist-minded leaders in their government. And Poland felt that they were going to conquer Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. And, of course, this is they actually gave an ultimatum 3 days before Poland was invaded with Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. They had killed German nationals in Denmark, in the city of Danzig, on Christmas Eve just before this. They killed in July again more German citizens as they were going to church for some high mass, and when Germany had asked for reparations and assurity that this would not ever happen again, Poland says that or what, and Germany says we'll attack, and Poland sent a telegram, attack and be damned, and the British councils and the American councils saw what he sent to Germany. It's a matter of record. We've got it in the white papers, and so forth. And, of course, Germany said, all right, they won't let us have an election in Danzig. Remember that in the Treaty of Versailles in 1918, that it was stated there that in 20 years, the city of Danzig could have an election to decide whether to go back to Germany again. And the corridor would return to Germany, and the land which had been taken, and it had been divided up, and Poland had been given control over it. And Poland would not let them have an election. Now, 1918... 20 years was 1938. Hitler's government asked for a free election in the city of Danzig for the Carter to have its chance to vote whether they wanted to return to Germany, and this they would not let them do, and they refused this, and this was a violation of the Treaty of Versailles, which had laid the groundwork again for World War II. So when Hitler attacked Poland, in 2 weeks' time, they had all Poland conquered, and Fort Chesterfort, which was one of the strongest fortresses, was shelled by the pocket battleship of Germany and brought to her knees, And so Poland fell. But at this time, remember, that then Russia came into Finland, and then she entered the war. She was moving into Poland as well. And she moved into Poland, and she grabbed off parts of Poland. But all the administrators of Polish underground that had helped the purpose, right, this were in also Russian control. And they later, by Russia, were placed in the saddle for a Russian satellite government. Now, therefore, the governor that devoured the many peoples around about was Hitler, and they never had another one like him. And so, therefore, it says, but now after this, Jerusalem shall be inhabited in her own place, even in Jerusalem. Now, this again is talking about the structure of all the house of God. Now, it says, however, that one of the conditions that is going to transpire at the end of the age, and the book of Zechariah, it has separate paragraphs, and they're separated. And in the text, they were separated, but in here, they're set in chapters, which don't always go together. For instance, now, again, and the Lord will save the tents of Judah first, and the glory of the house of David, and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and do mighty things against Judah. In that day, the Lord shall defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as God, and the angel of the Lord shall be before them. Now, the fact is that a portion of Judah was in the king line of the house of David, which, of course, was an everlasting covenant. The king line of the house of David not only was always to remain in power as long as the sun, moon, and stars were in the sky, and God had promised that in the Psalms, and he'd promised that in his covenant to David, but we discover that when he said that he would dry up the green tree and cause the dry tree to flourish, he took the throne back in the days of Nebuchadnezzar taking the throne. They had captured Zedekiah, When they captured him and his sons and killed them, that Jeremiah, remember, took the tender twig, which was in the high cedars of Lebanon, and transferred it to Tahpenes in Egypt, and then carried it up to the British Isles, to Ireland, to Scotland, to Wales, where she had first married Hergeman of Ireland, who was also Davidic line, and also Israel's king, ruling in the Anglo-Saxon house, which had migrated out of Shalmaneser's time and over into Europe. Now, remember that, therefore, that these people were in Europe, and they were well established when Zedekiah took over the daughter of Tetephi, married her, and refreshened the line. Now, the dry tree, the green tree, had become a dry tree. Judah and Benjamin had become dead. But the areas of Joseph, or the green, was now the dry tree become the green tree. And God says, I will water her the shoots of her tree and send it out over all the world. The fowls of the world will dwell underneath her empire and so forth. And she will, and I'll water her plantations, and the waters will. And so, therefore, we discover that this is the British Empire and its expanse as it was planted by the oceans and spread out and so forth. But from Ireland to Scotland to Wales goes the king line. Now, it was a Davidic king line. It was a king line of the house of Judah ruling in Joseph. Now, Judah itself was in Germany as a people. Some of Judah had actually settled also in Scotland, though the majority of the Scottish people were not necessarily Judah. But the fact remains that Judah was Germany, and also the Davidic line in the house of Britain. Now, I want to point out for this questionnaire remember that Kaiser Wilhelm, King George of Great Britain, and Tsar Nicholas were all first cousins. So you see, the king lines that ruled over the nations of Europe in the First World War were all of the mother of the lioness, who was Israel's mother, and they all came out of the house of David. And so therefore, even though the throne is to remain in the house of Joseph until Christ comes, whose right it is to take it, still Kaiser Wilhelm didn't understand this area of prophecy and thought that he was going to build a palace on the Mount of Olives and rule till Jesus came. And these were his own words. Of course, you wouldn't hear anything good about the Kaiser, because propaganda wanted to build him up as a monster that was butchering people and so forth. But this is strictly Jewish propaganda. When they can't win, they scream. But the fact still remains that we sometimes, like the Romans, think that everything that isn't a part of our own forces are barbarians. But the fact is that we have been twice in the wrong war at the wrong time. But anyhow, the situation is that the house of Germany is Judah. Now, remember that she stands between us and the Russians. And even though that a third of Israel has fallen into the hands of the Soviet troops, as the scriptures said they would, and Eastern Europe is in the hands of the Soviets, many people still are Christians, persecuted there and in Hungary and in Romania. Many people have fought against them. In fact, Hungary almost overthrew the regime if they hadn't been betrayed by rascals in our country. In fact, out of our own State Department must have gone the communications, because we had good workers behind the Iron Curtain, and everything was going on. And when Hungary tried to overthrow the Soviet Union, we told them that we would send barges of weapons, and they'd come down the river. And so Mikhailovich came out, and he had a great company of his Hungarian Christians, and they came down to the canal to the barges, and the barges came along, and these men rose up to get the guns, and they threw the canvases off, and Russian soldiers cut down the Hungarians, and Mikhailovich and the rest of them. Some of them managed to escape, many of them were caught. This was a catastrophe, and the betrayal had come right out of this country, out of our own State Department, or out of somebody here that was secretly working for this, or else the Russians had so penetrated our program that they were able to seize the ships, and we didn't do anything about it. Mr. Eisenhower never did a thing about it either, and said that, well, we'll send you bandages, but not bullets and so forth. Well, the fact remains again. Remember that Germany is in the nutcracker. Now, this coming fall, the areas of the Soviet Union, which are contemplating to start up the war over Berlin, and is set for October, November by satellites. Eastern Germany is going to demand that Berlin be turned over to Eastern Germany, or they're going to attack. And this attack has already stepped up with 2.5 times the military strength they had 7 months ago. So therefore, we are going to be forced to put our troops in the line with Germany, because Germany can't defend all Europe. And Germany and France can't, or Germany and Spain may do a pretty good job of it, but they still need nuclear weapons, because the Russians will have tactical nuclear weapons. So I predict that we will move large expeditionary forces over to help the Germans hold the map of Europe against the Soviet satellites, and we're very, very foolish if we let Russia stay out of it as though she were not involved, because Kosygin made the statement 2 weeks before he came over to talk with the President of the United States, and he says the world will have peace when the world is Soviet. And Kosygin made the statement 2 weeks before he came over to talk with the President of the United States, and he says the world will have peace when the world is Soviet. And so we well know how he understands. Remember that Mr. Kosygin was one of the devilish murderers of communism when Mr. Stalin first took over. And Mr. Kosygin was a commander in the army at that time, liquidating Christians and Ukrainians by the thousands. So don't ever think because he smiles and he talks a very beautiful Russian that he's to be trusted, because you never trust a Russian. If they were a devil then, they're a devil now. And when 2 weeks ago he talks about making a Soviet world and then there'll be peace, we can well see where their stand is. So now, therefore, even though we are committed in Asia and so forth, our first responsibility is to the white man. And there's enough Germans in America, and in every white country of the world, there's enough Germans there that they're going to cry out too, and the people are going to cry out that we've got to save Europe first. After all, you take our soldiers that are fighting in the Vietcon and the Vietnamese, and they say you don't know even who's behind you. You don't even know who's on your side. In fact, even the people you think are South Vietnamese may shoot you at night and so forth. And we've got letters back from our boys, and they say, well, you just don't know. A gook's a gook, but a white man's a white man. And when the Russians move in on Germany, whether they move in this fall or in the spring, though it's set up for this fall, we are going to have to divert our forces over, because this scripture will be fulfilled. We will save the tents of Judah first. And as this as the area of this, I want to point out that when they say since the king came from Judah, it's more likely England, isn't it? No. It's not more likely England is Judah. England is a part of the house of Joseph. And the king line of David is now located in the throne of Britain. But Judah still is Germany and still is in this area. Now, therefore, Judah is ruling in Ephraim, but still is the throne of David in the line of Judah. Now, it says, why do you stress Germanic race so? Well, we stress it because it happens to be one of the dynamic parts of the white race, and the whole white race is Israel. We stress it because it's Christian, and we stress it because it helped to turn effectively the hordes of Genghis Khan. Because when Jesus said that there would be, that these empires coming against the civilization of Israel, that five are fallen, one is yet to come, and then the eighth that comes out of this one yet to come, which was the seventh. And of course, this is again Egypt, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, Assyria, of course, and then Greece and Rome. Now, then, five of them had fallen. Now, Rome still existed. The seventh was the hordes of Genghis Khan that the Jews had moved into Venice then, had financed and had led to come against Christian civilization. And this is the eighth that comes out of the seventh having a deadly wound, almost to death. And this is when the hordes, at the death of Genghis Khan, broke up, though the hordes continued to harass Europe until the late 14th century. In fact, remember that when 1492, when Isabella was financing Columbus to sail the ocean, that the Turco-Mongols and the Moors had come into Spain, were still fighting in Spain, and of course Isabella was to drive them out of Spain. And remember that at the same time, even in 1492, while there had been skirmishes in Romania and Hungary, and it had only been just before this, of course Martin Luther, remember, had called for the unity of all of the forces in Europe to help turn the hordes of Antichrist, and Martin Luther had a tremendous battle on theologically with Rome, and there had been much martyrdom and persecution and battles, but he and the Pope made up, and the Pope and Martin Luther actually called a truce because the armies of Antichrist were coming into Europe, which were the hordes of Genghis Khan run by Jewry. Now, remember, Martin Luther and the seven princes that were in Germany, not only did they unite all of Germany against these hordes, but even in the days of Martin Luther, they were still doing this. And the Jews were in Germany, wore yellow armbands, just like they did in the very beginning, and they were betraying all the peoples of wealth and station. And Martin Luther said, these Jews with these yellow armbands, don't you ever let any Jew join the church, for if he joins the church, he'll make the church the fold of hell, and he will, as a heretic, he has no value in the faith, he doesn't believe in Christ, he's betraying you to the barbarians, and the Jews should be gathered up by the princes of Germany, stripped of all the things they have stolen from the people and driven out of the country. Now, these are the words of Martin Luther. I can show it to you in Luther's works in here. So you see, these factors were going on at that time. So the peoples of Germany were the house of Judah, and they were Christian, as were the house of the house that was in Britain. Now, remember that the princes of Germany saw that Shaghi Khan, who was a son or a nephew of Genghis Khan, had taken over the area of the Russias, and they established Tsar Khans over the Russias. Now, the Russias Russias had been built up by Mongoloid troops and about 40 varieties of Asiatics, and everybody was in the Russias. But so Germany gathered up armies from the seven princes and some Scandinavians, and they marched into Russia, some of them by way of Finland and some of them into Russia. And and Shaghi Khan was aging, and they destroyed Shaghi Khan. And the white military of Germany fought a successful war. They had to cross. Remember, they fought their way through the Ukraine. They had to cross that tremendous vast area, and it was almost wintertime when they took Moscow, and they established the Tsar of Russia. A German prince was placed on the throne as a Tsar or Tsar Khan in place of Shaghi. Now they stayed there that winter. Then the next year, a migration of Germans and Finns from Europe and Prussians came over, and they settled there to help hold this fort. And there was about 4,000 of the peoples of Germany formed the court around this German prince, who now fanned out with their troops until they gained control over the Ukraine, over the areas of the Russias, and they broke the power of Genghis Khan's hordes. From that day to this, the rule over Russia was white. So, or up until the Red Revolution. Now the German princes married into the royalty of Britain and into the royalty of Scandinavia, and practically every throne line in Europe was a throne line of Israel. Now, therefore, it happens that it was through this intermarriage of the king lines that they were all first cousins, of course, at the time of World War I. Now, remember that the Tsar Nicholas was on the throne, and the White Russians were in rule, when the Bolshevik Revolution, organized by Jewry, financed by Kuhn Loeb and Company, by his own admission in the Jewish Encyclopedia, and so forth, when they put over with the Warburgs and the Frankfurters and so forth, the revolution, they liquidated the white Christians, they murdered the Tsar, they murdered the princes, they murdered the royalty, and all the white royalty was driven out, captured, destroyed. Some of them escaped into the various continents of Europe. Some of them made San Francisco, where they were harassed, by the way, by Mr. Khrushchev when he came over, and his Iron Guard, because our State Department let them send in their Ogpu, and they actually harassed the white Russian American citizens in San Francisco when he came. This is how much defect our administrations have gone in the last few years. But the fact still remains that when the Bolshevik Revolution came over, the Mongol hordes under Jewry rose back to power, and they kept sowing Mongols into Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, which they had taken, and they had forced the men out into the mines, they had murdered them. And today, the majority of the Russians today are Mongols or Asiatic blood and Jewish blood. And the Khazars, of course, were partially converts to the Talmudic pattern of Jewry. But remember this, that Jewry, with over 3 million people, run the Soviet Union today. The Germans have been pushed, were murdered, and driven out, and the white Russians were basically the Slavic and Germanic seed. Now remember that when in the establishment of the throne lines, the soldiers of Israel, in the days when God established the throne of Israel, and established where the tribes would be around the defense in the days of David and so forth, he had all the tribes were given their place around the tabernacle and around the temple. And so we find that Issachar and Naphtali and Judah were on the east. On the west was Ephraim and Manasseh and Benjamin were on the west south was Reuben and Gad and Simeon. And then on the north was Asher and Naphtali and let me see, in Denmark. All right, now remember that these tribes have kind of held their position to this day. When they migrated into Europe, they actually settled in this fashion. For instance, Ephraim, Manasseh, and the tribe of Benjamin are Anglo-Saxon, and the British Isles, and Benjamin largely is still in Iceland. Iceland is almost pure Benjamin, though there is Benjamin scattered in other areas. And remember that in the south, Gad is the Italian, or Rome, and the Lombard. Simeon is Spain, and Simeon is a very powerful prophetic nation in the things that it has done in the past, in the areas of expansion, colonization, spreading out, and conquering. So Simeon was Spain, and Reuben was in the south that migrated north and through the Pyrenees and settled in Holland. And of course, Reuben is, they know this. In fact, they have so many songs about Reuben and how they are Reuben. And Reuben, Reuben, I've been thinking. Rachel, Rachel, I've been thinking. Both Israelitish names and so forth. And how all these songs are the songs. And the orange banner of the house of Reuben becomes the ruling house of the house of Reuben or Holland. And they call it the house of orange to this day. And their banner is the banner of Reuben. And so here is where Reuben went. Now, on the east side, we have the house of Judah, which is Germany. We have the house of Zebulun, which happens to be the Slavic peoples, and the house of Issachar, which is Finland. Remember when Russia was attacking Finland and Mannerheim was leading Finland? He said, "Men of Issachar, stand and die. Nothing but scorched earth, cursed by God, will fall into Russian hands." And this even, I've got a film with this on, where Mannerheim said, "Men of Issachar, stand and die." So you see, and one of the things that, one of the speeches that was made by Franklin Delano Roosevelt at the night that Russia was attacking Finland, he says the Russian tiger will never change its stripes. He says that a little Finland, he says, blessed of God, courageously fights. We will assist Finland against the hordes of Russia. This is the speech that he made. But then all the Jews came on and they didn't do anything about it. And the only person that helped Finland was Germany, of course, which though they were, because even in that pact that had been signed by Germany and Russia, when Germany saw that she was stuck for war, she signed a pact with Russia that she would never attack Russia if Russia would never attack any of the countries of Europe. The ink was hardly dry on the pact when Russia poured into Finland. And so Germany backed Finland right away and saw that Russia moved into Poland as well. Even when Germany was moving into Poland, Russia came down and grabbed off a piece of Poland. That's how the Katyn massacre occurred, of course. And so the fact is that Germany was loosed from her commitment because Russians came on the area of Romania's lines and all these areas. And so when Germany was ready, she didn't want to fight England. She didn't want to fight the United States, even though they were forced to, because we had declared war on her because she was fighting Poland, and so forth. She didn't want to fight Holland, but she wanted to come in and occupy Holland until the war was over, and the Queen made a deal with them, and she went over to England, and a Jewish general inside of Holland turned the machine guns on the aircraft that had landed the high officers that were coming in to set up the occupation, and one plane took off, and this is why they bombed Rotterdam, and they notified the Holland people to get out of Rotterdam, because this was the city of the diamond merchants and the Jews, and they destroyed her. So again, these are some of the untold stories, and still they're the facts and they're the records that move out of World War II. But the thing is that in this battle against communism, communism is our enemy. Let's remember this is our enemy. Communism is our enemy. She controls more of the world's peoples than we do. She has probably almost 2/3 of the world's people now coming under communism throughout the areas of Asia, the areas of Africa. And we are in the last days. Now, instead of people being still hostile to Germany, they had better realize that we have been forced apart by our enemies and that we have this in common. We're both Christian. We are both white. That we have the strength, and that certainly Germany has the utter determination to fight communism forever. And so also has Spain and Simeon, the utter determination to fight communism forever. And we're going to need a lot of forces, and our perimeter is scattered wide, and these situations are coming to pass with great speed. After all, we have already committed ourselves to three last day dates. One was in 1962 with the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. The second great date was 3.5 years later, which was terror time, because this was even declared by Enoch as the time that God would sweep in after his sign appeared in the heavens, that he would come in. The first sign would be the sign of his coming, which was given in Enoch, and then the sign of that would precede the coming of the eternal God to rejoin his people and for great victories. So in 1962, we had the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. Then just a year and a half ago, we had the sign of the terror time. And I'll tell you that terror time has been making a much more speed than people realize. Not only did we lose Barney Baruch right after this, but we lost Jew after Jew. Powerful big Jews are swept away. You know, the other day we lost another big Jew too. And he was one of the big wheels behind Firestone Rubber Company, see? And also one of the most powerful Jews in the area of General Electric. General Electric had a big Jew at the head of this, and this Jew just died, and they didn't say much about it, but But now remember, one of these days, God's going to take all the tares out of the way that are in here, and they're going to take them away fast. This is going to be a good deal, see? And we have now passed that time. Now we have come up to the abomination of the desolator. He stood in the holy place. Whether it means the 5 weeks ago, Wednesday night, when he took the city of Jerusalem, or 5 weeks ago, Monday night, when he took the city of Jerusalem, or whether it means when he starts to tear down the Mosque of Omar, which is supposedly set for a couple of months, the fact is we have already approached or are at the hand of three important biblical datings, and we are in the latter days. And we are told that the wars will increase, the catastrophes will increase, the Negro riots will increase, anything communism has its hand on will increase to destroy Christian America and Western civilization. Well, we can't push this off. If we pushed it off, we would just be just stalling it, see? Now remember, therefore, everything is set up, it looks like, for this year or next year, with Negro violence already starting, and we wouldn't push it away for 1 minute. Someone says, oh, if we could just push it away and get ready. Well, you'd be getting ready forever, because, I mean, the people are this way. You know, the thing that'll get America most ready will be when these Negroes break out with the riots all over America, and all in this violence, the white man's going to rise up. Now, there may be a lot of willy-nillies, there may be a lot of peaceniks in the city, and there may be a lot of peaceniks in the churches, and they're going to get some rough strips. I'm going to tell you that the biggest desertion of the Christian churches that are standing up for the National Council and these ministers that don't know anything is coming this fall and coming because these fellas have been pushing the nigger deal, and when America wakes up, they're going to just desert this thing like they had the plague. And I'm going to tell you that the churches that are preaching the gospel of the kingdom and are standing up for truth are never going to have the people they're going to have when as they turn. And God says, I'm going to sound my alarm, and the people are going to stand by their armies and by their men, and they're going to stand by their civilization. And when this thing starts, white man will go to the shoulder of white man as Negroes move to the shoulder of Negroes. And the law of race is one of the strongest and most powerful forces that ever have been implanted deep in the hearts of men. So these are things that we know. Now, so therefore, again, we say, let's not sell Germany short. We're going to need every German, and every one of them we killed we wished was on his feet to hold off these Russian hordes when they come. You can be thankful that God says, I'm going to sound my voice before my army. And when he comes in, he says, I'm going to raise up a great and mighty army as well. We'll be mighty glad for all the resurrected Germans and Americans and everything else that will join this fight, because this fight is going to be a big one. But remember again, God's promised immunity in the final hours of this day to the soldiers of his kingdom. They won't be able to shoot them. They won't be able to run them through. They won't turn their to move march right or left. When we start marching, we're going right through. No harm can come near the household of the Most High God. So when we see these things, someone says, how do you know? Because we believe every word that comes out of the mouth of God. Because it is true. Because we can see. Now, we have dozens of more scriptures that we can use to establish the Germans or Germany. But I think that this ought to hold this particular question for this evening. And if there's any questions, we'll be glad to answer it.
Well, I just heard of the news that Israel left home. He wasn't a little paper that the Spanish million, 500,000, have already said that they would fight with Israel.
This is not true. The Spaniards who, as a government, as a million and a half men, said that if Russia tried to encircle the Middle East and move against Israel and come into Algeria, that Spanish troops would never permit the Russians to hold the other side of the Strait of Gibraltar. In other words, the Spaniards say that if the Straits of Gibraltar on the other side were held by the Russians, the underside of Europe would be wide open, and the conquest of Europe would become very easy. So therefore, that Algeria and Morocco are on the other side of the Mediterranean. Now, Ben Bella is socialist and left wing. But if Russia moves in to Palestine and comes up into Algeria and Morocco and then holds these satellites, why Spain said that they would fight to the last man. In other words, remember, Spain is dead set against Russia, absolutely dead set against Russia. And they, like the Arabs, may be taken in on some of the Russian play because they haven't been as close to it. But the fact still remains that we will be able to count 100% on Spanish armies against the Red.
You say against the Red.